council. So we are very pleased that he was able to accept our invitation, and we hope that our
related
project continues to work so that we can see his pictures. So without further ado, we'll call on Brian now.
How far I can back that up?
Well, first of all, good afternoon. As John said, my name is Brian Belous, and it is my pleasure to speak with you today. Now, I actually see a few faces that I'm related to here. So Vic and Irene, and then Derek and Rosemary and Roger as well are all part of my kind of large family that we have. And then I saw on the sign on the way in that Ken Belous is preaching on Sunday, and he's another relation. So
we're overcome with
Belous this morning. Yeah. Well, so if this is bad, just it's genetics. You can just go with that. But truly, it is a pleasure to speak to you today. I think far too often people my age and folks your age don't spend enough time getting to know one another. I mean, I can only imagine the wealth of wisdom and the abundance of experience that's in front of me here today. And so part of me feels like I shouldn't be the one talking, I should be the one listening. But hopefully you won't be too disappointed. And if you are, at least you got an excellent meal today. So, now, my life journey, I guess, started here in Saskatchewan in a small town called Hyas, up north of Yorkton. My father was a farmer up there, and so was his father before that, and a lot of the family. It'll pop back on. So I had a stay-at-home mother and two sisters, and we lived, I think, a fairly typical rural Saskatchewan life. Fairly humble existence, I think. Went to a little Baptist church in Hyas, and we were happy. I graduated from high school in a town called Norquay, and that's when I made my move to the big city of Regina, or what I thought was the big city, to enter university to pursue a degree in education to teach high school math and sciences. So that was my first big adventure, I guess. I won't get into too much of that because, well, you can imagine what university is like for a young guy and with his friends, and we had a lot of fun times and a lot of silly times as well. But you know, after a few years of university, it was time to do a teaching internship, and somehow or other, my friend and I, who I happened to live with at the time, we ended up asking to have our placement in northern Saskatchewan. To this day, I'm not completely sure why we asked for such a placement when there's a lot of great schools around here. But I'm actually very thankful that I made that kind of maybe adventurous choice back then, because I ended up living in the town of La Loche in northern Saskatchewan, and this was, I think, a place where a lot of great change happened in my life. Now, I want to show you where La Loche is, for those of you who don't know. So,
it's kind of small, but La Loche.
Dark.
Now I'm good.
Lights up.
North of north.
Quite a bit north of here. So there's Saskatchewan. The Losh is 900 kilometers north of Regina. You head to Prince Albert, and then you keep going, basically to the end of the paved road. And beyond that, there's some ice roads and some gravel roads that they use for mining and whatnot. Now, this actually turned out to be a great adventure for me. I had never really been anywhere different. I grew up in a small rural community. All of the kids that I went to school with were white for the most part. Everyone spoke English. I didn't know too much about other sorts of people, I guess. Now, oh, I forgot. I want to show you one other thing. Put up some pictures while I talk here. That's a different adventure. There we go. So these are some photos from my time in La Losh, and I'll just let them play while I talk. So until that point, when I moved up north, I think I had always experienced God and my faith in the context of very familiar things. So church, Sunday school, saying grace at mealtimes, family devotions in the morning, summer camps, vacation Bible school. I did all of that, and that was what I was used to. La Losh kind of changed that. Suddenly I had no regular church, no youth group or Bible study that I attended. And not to mention, for the first time in my life, I was not a member of the majority. I was the minority. You see, La Losh is a First Nations community in the north where it's a Dene community. So the Dene people are very interesting people that speak the Dene language, and most of the people did not speak English as their first language. This was shocking to me because I thought, I'm in Saskatchewan and these people don't speak English. Not to mention the faith heritage of that community happened to be Catholic. And that came from the French settlers that ended up in the north. The Catholic tradition was also something I wasn't familiar with. So I think, in a sense, this was the first place where I started to see God in new and different ways. Suddenly I couldn't rely on a good Bible study to experience God's presence. But I started to notice it in other ways. So, in the incredible acts of hospitality that my new friends and neighbors up north showed me, in the love shared between the people that I worked with, in the compassion that people had up there for broken people, and in the poor and oppressed people that lived up there. I think this was one of the first places I really saw real poverty. There weren't a lot of jobs, there wasn't a lot to do, and things were really run down and broken. But on the other hand, the people had an incredible connection with the creation around them. A lot of people lived off the land, hunted, fished, and shared that with me and my friend. Two young, naive white boys. So suddenly, my lessons in the Christian faith came from real life experiences, not necessarily from clever Bible studies or shiny Sunday school pamphlets. So my faith suddenly went outside of the walls of the familiar for me. It was a brief few months in my life, but I think an important one, and I look back on it with much fondness. So a few months later, I finished up my degree in education, and I found myself working at Luther College High School here in Regina, which was
a complete 180 from where I was. Here at Luther, there were a lot of kids who had money, had supportive families, and were more familiar to me. I knew what I was getting myself into, sort of, because what I did get myself into was being the dean of the boys' residence there at Luther, and teaching part-time. So in one sense, it was very familiar, I was teaching, I was part of this community, and in another sense, it was a whole new world, a boys' dormitory. So here I was in charge of students from all over the world. So we had students from all the Asian countries, from Europe, from Africa, from South America, from all over Canada. Probably 5 different languages were spoken in the dorms. And so in a sense, it was kind of familiar or similar to Lalosh, where English wasn't necessarily the dominant language, and there were different beliefs and traditions that I wasn't used to. So here again, my faith, as well as my patience, were challenged in new ways. How would I take myself from a place like Lalosh, where there is real poverty, people are hurting and overlooked and neglected, and shift that and go into a place of affluence and wealth and live in a community of very fortunate people who were working and attending school at Luther. So over the next 3 years while I was there, I think God taught me that all people are His children. Poor or rich, white or not, it didn't matter. And I started to see my faith and God in a different way. Again, different from Lalosh this time. What does it mean to love God and love my neighbor when they're doing all right? You know, they're not the Samaritan that was beat up on the side of the road. They're the priest that walks by. How do I love that priest who's kind of a jerk? And love the Samaritan too. So, you know, what if my neighbor is an annoying teenage boy? How do I love him? Or, on the other hand, a poor First Nations man who lives off the land. So, or anyone else for that matter. Now, those lessons that I learned in Lalosh about acting out my faith outside of the church walls and outside of the familiar kind of church experiences that I had served me well at Luther in that diverse community that I was in. But apparently this wasn't enough change for me or adventure. So after 3 years at Luther, I decided to move again. This time I thought, well, let's make a real change and move to Africa. So I did some research and looked up a charity organization that does teaching in foreign countries, and found an opportunity to travel to the country of Namibia in Southwest Africa. So I'll also show you where Namibia is to give you a bit of context.
So here we are in Canada. Yeah, that was my flight went from New York to South Africa, Johannesburg. It was, I think it was 14 hours or so. And I ended up in this little town, which was basically an intersection. And let me zoom out so you can see where this intersection was. It was basically in the middle of a desert. So this country right here is Namibia, and I was in this little arid part of it. let's zoom out a bit more. You can see the African landmass. So I was in the south. And southern Africa is known for a few things. AIDS, HIV/AIDS, malaria, extreme poverty. And I somehow found myself as the only white fellow for a few hundred kilometers around. Which was quite fun because you would go to a new town and people already knew who you were. You didn't even have to. It was obvious, right? So, now I'm not sure if I could tell you all of the reasons that I went to Namibia. I guess when it comes down to it, I felt like I wanted to go on an adventure while I was young and had the chance to do it. But I also wanted to experience something totally different than what I knew already. So like I said, I went for a year, and I was a volunteer teacher in a government school in my town, which was called Omashete. English was probably the third or fourth language for most people there. So they spoke a language called Oshiherero, which... if they said good morning, they'd say, Wapenduka Nawa! And that's kind of how it sounded. You'd say, Ee, Wapenduka Nawa! And so it was fun. and then Afrikaans was another language that a lot of people spoke, as well as a number of other tribal languages, and then German. Strangely enough, a few people spoke German based on the fact that Namibia was a German colony around the early 1900s. Now, boy, I could tell you all sorts of stories about living there. Hitchhiking, that was my mode of transportation. I would do a grocery run once every couple of weeks, and it was about a 100-kilometer drive, which I would hitchhike, and I would take my backpack and fill it with food. Hitchhiking. There were always adventures with hitchhiking, whether it was flat tires or getting dropped off in a place you didn't know or having to walk in the hot sun with frozen food in your backpack, hoping it'll last the 5 hours it takes you to get home. What else could I tell you? Stumbling over goats in the middle of the night while I tried to make my way to the bathroom, which was outside of my house. Well, trying to speak the language and making a fool of myself again and again. Or trying to teach beautiful Namibian children how to work a computer or how to read a book. My town in Namibia had actually a Roman Catholic church and a Lutheran church, interestingly enough. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to check out this little Lutheran church. And, the first time I was there, I had the opportunity to speak in front of everyone like I am today. I kind of was put on the spot. So that was a bit of an experience. I sat on the wrong side when I first went there. All the women sat on one side and all the men sat on one side. And I was... took me about 20 minutes to realize that I was with all the women and all the men were over there. And then, strangely enough, the pastor preached the sermon in Oshiherero, which I didn't understand. And then he preached it again directly to me in English. So I felt like it was a bit of a distraction. So it was a wonderful experience, and going to church with people there, and then also finding comfort in the books I brought. I attend an Anglican church here in town, so I had the Book of Common Prayer that I turned to, and a number of podcasts on my computer that I would listen to. That kind of kept me rooted in some of the teachings of the faith that I knew. And
again, I felt like my faith went outside the walls of the church that I was used to. You know, the forays into the countryside where I would go for a run or I would go to explore the local watering hole, seemingly always trailing with me a small gang of children who wanted to know what I was doing. And, you know, I learned a lot from these children, and I think I learned a lot about God and about my faith from little kids who I couldn't really talk to because they didn't speak English. But I saw how they loved each other, how they were content with what they had, and that wasn't very much. You know, I'd be walking along with my nice hiking shoes, and I'd still get a thorn that would go through and poke my foot, and these kids would be barefoot, and they'd laugh at me when I was hurting my foot because, you know, a thorn couldn't pierce their calloused feet at all. I learned from them how not to judge, especially while I was trying to wash my own clothing by hand, and they all kind of helped me instead of laughing at me. I learned how to welcome a stranger. These people were incredibly generous with what little they had, and how to share. Two small boys that I met there, they would come and visit me, and they had one pair of shoes between the two of them, and they would take turns. One day, the one boy, his name was Gottlieb, would wear them, and the next day his friend Enright would wear them. And they would switch off back and forth. And these boys were probably, well, they were grade 4 and grade 5, so I don't know, 9 and 10 years old, maybe. Now, in the way that Lalash taught me to see God in some unlikely places, I think Namibia reminded me of his continual presence. And it was most visible to me in the actions of the people that I lived with. So I'm sure I could talk about Africa all day, and hopefully some of you might be interested in chatting about that after, but I would like to point out that these experiences, along with a number of others, I think I even had the chance to do some traveling with Mrs. Morgan back there. We were travel mates to, where did we go again? Kenya in Africa at one point. I like to do a bit of traveling to the mountains. I like to do some hiking and camping and outdoorsy stuff. But I think what I've learned through all of these experiences is that God uses wherever we are to teach us different things. It takes our effort to look, to try to see what he's doing. So faith, in a sense, for me, has come to be something that isn't supposed to be done just at church. Rather, it's more of a vocation, something you do in the day-to-day, in the interactions you have with people, and when you're by yourself, away from everything, like I was in Africa quite often. Now, I would like to show you some pictures and a little video from my time there so that you get a sense of what it actually looked like. And then I'll finish up after that. So these were some of my neighbor children while I was in Africa. They didn't speak English, but they were always interested to know what I would do, and they always loved to pose for the camera. So I pulled that out, and they were doing their best modeling poses. Running. I actually took up running while I was there, and I ran a half marathon. And these boys were excellent runners, but I always found it amazing that they're running in sandals. And they would run for 5 or 10 kilometers in sandals. Or if they had dress shoes,
if those were their only shoes, because they wore uniforms at school, they would wear their dress shoes. And try as I might, I could never keep up with them. I think I ran 10 kilometers once with a boy who was in grade 5. And at about kilometer 9, he asked me when we were going to start running fast. So that's when I laid down and just gave up. Oh yeah, oh yeah, no doubt. This is a picture I took on my front step. This is the sunset I went to bed to every night. The African sun is something that you have to see to really know. Again, beautiful children. I think actually one of the things that I learned most from Africa was coming home. I started to see the children here in a different way, and the people here in a different way. Not in a way where I thought, oh, we're so privileged here, we have all this stuff, which we do, but in a way that was, these are God's children, whatever they have. And who am I to judge what anyone's been through? Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you, they like to pose for the camera. You'll notice this porridge they ate. A number of students lived at the school. Probably 100 students live at the school, and this was grades 1 to grade 8. And they ate maize porridge every meal of every day for the week. Until Saturday, they would get fish and rice. And then Sunday, they would get, they called it fat cakes, but it was basically like a timbit. It was a donut that they deep fried in oil, cooked over a fire, of course. Of course, there weren't only people in Africa. I got to do a bit of sightseeing and saw this fellow and his lady friend having lunch, I guess. Zebras were everywhere. They were all over the place. It was kind of like, oh, there's a deer. You know how we say that? Oh, there's a deer. Here, it's like, oh, there's a zebra, and there's some giraffe. It was kind of, yeah, it was interesting. And this big fellow was lumbering around by himself. And maybe this was my favorite day. This was the boy actually that asked me when I would run fast with him. He loved cows. His dad had cows and sold cows, and they had a big auction in our town, and so he took me to teach me all about the cows one day, which was a great experience that I'll always remember. Not because I don't know about cows, but because he was so excited to tell me about them. And then again, some beautiful children who, you know, you could swap those five with five kids from here, and I think they would look just about the same. How they pose, the hands, they like that kind of thing. So here we have just a picture of someone's house. It's, the walls are made from homemade bricks that are mixed with mud, cement, manure, and then goats grazing. Goats always seem to enjoy nestling up against my front door and rattling it in the night. I always thought someone was trying to break in, but sure enough, it would be a goat. This is someone's house. And then this is the little Lutheran church. All the walls and the roof were made of corrugated metal. And as you can imagine, around noon when the sun was up on a day when it was 40 degrees Celsius, that little church was quite hot. you could probably fry more than an egg on top of that thing. Some of my colleagues from school, this would be traditional dress. This lady and this lady dressed up for some occasion, and then this would be working wear. She was one of the custodians of the school. But all of this is homemade. All of the clothing would be made by these women, by people that they know. Beautiful jewels and fabrics and patterns, colors. And back to these kids.
Yes.
Now, the last thing I want to show you, and then I'll wrap up really quick, is just a short video that I put together. I'd often walk around with my camera just to try to take some videos about what was going on in my town. So. Hitchhiking. Where the students slept, who lived at the school. This is my laundry day. And then the school where I worked. School choir. These were the boys that shared shoes every day.
So obviously it was a great experience for me. I have stories that I'll have for the rest of my life. And it actually affected great change in my life. So since returning from Africa, like John said, I started pursuing a master's degree in educational psychology with the goal of becoming a counselor when I'm done. I've had the opportunity since then to work with vulnerable children here in town with the YWCA at a therapeutic group home. And then I've also actually this year returned to work at Luther in my old job as the dean of boys. And then I've also had the chance to do some counseling there. So it seems to me that God is present in all of these places where I've been. For me, the interactions that I've had on a day-to-day basis are where I see him. And I think I see him most clearly in the faces of the people I'm with. So I suppose where I've been has shaped who I am and how I live out my faith. And perhaps these experiences have just been new and different ways for me to discover a little bit more about God. And that's how I've gotten this far. So I want to say thank you. In Oshi Herero, they would say, Oku hepa shenene, it just means thank you very much. And it's been my pleasure. So now you can go home.